talking about the grocery store guy with the Leaf comments and what needs to happen and what doesn't need to happen, etc. I don't like this guy.
Yeah.
How do you see the left wing situation playing out? I think Nick Ritchie, it's been disappointing for him. I think he let a real quality opportunity slide. He might continue to play there because I don't know who else is going to go up and replace him. But could they even go out and acquire a top-line left wing to play? Like, I don't even know if these things could, because that's what I'm getting now. It's like, go out and get a left winger. And I kind of like the early trade. Like, as a fan of hockey, I like seeing a team not wait till the deadline, but
yeah.
There's been a bunch of examples over the year where it's like an early pull the trigger on a deal, but I don't even know if they could do it.
Well, is the answer internally, right? I mean, you know, you pick up Kyle Clifford as a depth guy, so does
and
someone...
And the Russian kid's injured right now.
Ilya Mikheyev?
Mikheyev, yeah.
But the Russian kid, yeah.
I forgot his name, so I said Russian.
By the way, welcome back to Overdrive. That's Jeff O'Neill, Jamie McLennan. I'm Gord Miller, sitting in for Brian Hayes, who's not feeling well today. We got Brian Burke coming up. We got our NFL picks. Pierre LeBrun's joining us. Leo Routin's talking about the Raptors in the NBA. I think right now, given that they've won 10 of the last 11.
It's not a concern.
I don't think it's a big... He hasn't been a great fit yet. No question, it hasn't been a great fit yet. They're giving him lots of runway. I just asked... I think the answer right now is internal. I think the answer is internal. Now, if you think that's a need... You know, because they're looking for some rambunctiousness. They're looking for some... What they want, I think, is an amalgam of things to give them what Zach Hyman gave them. Right?
Right.
Would you say that's fair? Oh?
Yeah.
So it might not be one guy. Like, Cash has given you some of that, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got some... He's got grit. He's got determination. Yeah. He's got all that. And, I mean, Nick Ritchie's physical, but it's just obviously it's not... I think Zach Hyman are all realizing that he is gone and he's a pretty damn good hockey player.
Sure.
Like, really, really good hockey player.
You're right. The other thing is, you know, they gave Bunting the opportunity and Bunting's kind of farther down now, right? Like, I don't know. Could be him.
I just don't know that it's time yet. And to your point earlier, about, you know, they gave up a lot of assets to get Nick Foligno. They've given up assets to get rid of Patrick Marleau and to get Jake Muzzin and others, and to get Jack Campbell. So at some point, you probably need to start reaccumulating or protecting your assets going forward. At some point, Nick Robertson is going to be a part of this group.
Right.
He's injured now, and it's going to be a while, obviously, yet. But I think the answer's inside, to answer your question. What do you think?
Well, it's going to be Mikheyev then, I would think. I mean, unless this Robertson kid gets off the injured list,
right,
and goes down to the American Hockey League and starts absolutely just like he's got a long way to go. Like,
yeah,
he's
sure.
got to rip through that American Hockey League and dominate, and then come up and figure out a way to do it at this level. He's a ways away from that, from what I've seen from him.
I think they are very comfortable with Kerfoot on the wing with the way that Camp is playing, so.
Yeah.
You know, you're really needing one guy to push through over time, because if they like what, you know, Kerfoot, Tavares, and Nylander, and now you've got Matthews and Marner, and you're putting Ritchie in there, I don't know if you're force-feeding him. I'll be honest, his last couple games, he hasn't been out of place.
Took a bad penalty against Nashville and got benched.
He did.
So he deserved it, right? He got benched for 8 minutes in the second period. He took a bad penalty.
Right.
It's not just a bad penalty, Gord. It's his history of bad penalties,
right.
And it's his third one this year.
Right.
I'm just saying that you're right. Maybe Mikheyev, they gave him, if you recall, in preseason, he's the one that asked for a trade in the offseason, mm-hmm. allegedly, didn't want to talk about it or whatever. And it was like they gave him as much runway to run with in preseason, and he looked pretty good. I thought he was effective. I thought he used his speed. I think he can score 15 to 20 goals because he gets so many chances with his speed. He's not a goal scorer, but he's a guy who you get that many chances just through osmosis. You're going to get, you know, some production. So they might go, you know what, we've got a spot being held by Ritchie, being held by Bunting,
mm-hmm.
really, until we see what Mikheyev's ceiling is playing consistently with, we'll call it, Matthews and Marner. So they might believe that he could be the guy. And if not, you know, oh, you, I agree with going to get somebody, but they might go, let's wait until the trade deadline and pick up a guy for pennies on the dollar that can add depth in that position, and he's still got lots of runway before the playoffs.
But if they're going to get someone, oh, isn't it a defenseman?
Like
the
I
last
think
couple,
so.
Because the last couple of years, Jake Muzzin's been hurt in the playoffs, and they've really suffered.
I totally agree, Gord. I think there's, I mean, you've talked about it before. Teams have faults. Every team's got them.
Sure,
and
every
it's
team,
like,
yeah.
And if you look at the Maple Leafs, you'd be thinking, like, if the deadline was tomorrow, you're like, can you get some kind of top-end defender, and could you get a left winger to play with Austin Matthews? I think, and the rest of the depth or internally would fill in and just fill in the rest, but I don't know. I like that kind of stuff. That's why I mentioned talking to callers. Do they have ridiculous takes and ridiculous trade proposals? And when things are going bad, they do want to get rid of everybody. But I like talking about potential transactions and things like that.
We lost. We lost.
Yeah, I know. You like it too, Gord. Like, get
you
people to call in, but these guys
scored,
will never
you scored
do
41
it.
Goals. I've been here 31 years. We lost.
We are
two defeated men.
That's right.
Last night, the Pittsburgh Penguins defeated the Montreal Canadiens 6-0. Sidney Crosby got his first goal of the year for the Penguins, who are right at 500 now and just outside the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference. Brian Burke is their president of hockey operations, and he spoke with us earlier and began by asking him how close this Penguins team is to what they envisioned at the start of the season.
Well, we haven't played with our whole lineup at all. We were hurt early. Sid had wrist surgery, and we had a bunch of injuries, and we had a COVID outbreak. So we haven't played with the whole group. So I'm going to give you a more precise answer in a moment. But I think it's miraculous that we're at 500, given the players we've played without. And it's really a testament to how the players have worked and stuck to the game plan. That being said, there's two unfortunate sides to this development, which is we wasted a good homestand. We had 8 games in a row at home, and that's where you try to make up some hay and didn't. And we wasted world-class goaltending. You know, Tristan Jarry has been terrific, and yet we're still at 500. So that's the two drawbacks. I think this team is pretty close. We're not ever going to be the same team until we get Geno Malkin back.
Yeah, Berkey, that's what I was going to talk about. Tristan Jarry didn't have the season that he envisioned last year being the number one. You know, what's been different about him this year from what you've seen in your experience? And, you know, how good has he been in light of all the challenges you guys have had in front of you?
Well, to me, and you know this, Jamie, there's nothing there's some things that only a calendar can cure. And in this case, Tristan Jarry had a really good year. We won a division title. People lose sight of that. And then his performance in the playoffs wasn't as good as he would like it to be. We see that as a normal progression for young goaltenders. You can point out half a dozen top goaltenders that struggled their first couple seasons, and we feel that's the case with Tristan. With Tristan, he's big, he's a superb athlete, he's a winner. He's been a winner everywhere he's played, and he's got amnesia. He gets over bad games quickly. So we really believe in him, and we think the goaltending is what we thought we'd get from Tristan Jarry. He's been terrific, and he's a great kid. He's a quiet kid. He never brags, never says a word.
Berkey, were you in Montreal last night for the game?
Yes.
Not that you really care, but how is that scene there? I know you've dealt with the Canadian markets. Were the fans getting a little bit ornery, or how was that experience?
Yeah, at the end they were getting a little bit ornery, but, I mean, look, you know this, though. Losing sucks. Losing is terrible in any sport. Doesn't matter. Losing in the Canadian market is infinitely harder. And when you're losing and you're losing and by lopsided margins, it really gets hard. So I felt for Mark Bergevin last night. I had a nice meeting with him before the skate yesterday. He's a wonderful human being. But I felt for him watching the game, you know, other than Cole Caulfield, who I thought had a couple of great shifts, a half a dozen of them. Other than that, they didn't get much done. So that's just hard. And I know people are throwing rocks at everyone in Montreal, but I've been in that seat, and I've had the people boo me, so I'm not going to say too much.
And by the way, Mark Bergevin tested positive for COVID today, just to add to the laments for Montreal. Brian, how do you avoid things going from bad to worse in a Canadian market? You talked about the challenge. There's probably markets in the U.S. where it happens as well, but it's been talked about a lot that in Canadian markets, where the media pressure and the fan pressure can be so intense, what kind of things can you do to keep the guardrails on?
Yeah, great question, Gord. And I will tell you this. I'm not complaining. Like, I listen to guys whine about the media in Canada, and they're like, oh, here we go again. The simple fact is the Canadian markets are fantastic to play in when you're in first place. There's the adulation and the knowledge, the close following of the team and the adoration that they have on the top players. It's really cool, and it's a special part of playing in Canada. The downside is that when you're not playing well, you get thumped. Even the mild-mannered media at some point turn, and social media turns right away. They turn like a, you know, it's like a weather vane. So they have one bad game, and they want to fire everybody and trade 16 guys. So that's the peculiar, like when I first got to Vancouver, I went there in 98, my second tour, and there was no social media to speak of. And, you know, it was pretty mild being the GM there. It's very different now.
Berkey, I had the pleasure of seeing you this weekend, you know, a couple amazing events celebrating some great people. You know, talk about Jerome going into the Hall of Fame and then obviously Dion getting honored on Tuesday night for his retirement.
I'll do that. Sorry, Gord, I did not answer your question. What are some of the guardrails? I think what has to happen is you got to simplify your game. The simplest way to win games is to dumb it down. So play more on your end, you know, chip pucks out, chip pucks in. It just simplify the game until your touch gets back. So that, and then buy earplugs is the only other advice I can give. So I didn't mean to not answer your question. I'm sorry. So turning to first Dion, I thought they did a really nice job. The Leafs are really good at that. The retirement ceremony for Dion and Alicia was beautiful. It was respectful. The video was great. I thought it was first class, and Dion Phaneuf was the captain of the Leafs for 6 years, longer than just about anyone, I think, except George Armstrong, and he was a good captain. We didn't have team success during my tenure and his, but I'll take the blame for that. I don't blame Dion for that. I thought he was a really good player for us and a wonderful person, so that was cool. And then seeing Jerome go in, you know, I had the distinct displeasure of having to play against Jerome McGinley teams for most of my career. And it wasn't any fun. And I never had him in Calgary. He was always gracious. You'd meet him, you know, in a rink or outside the building somewhere, and he'd always be polite and hello. I really liked him, but I hated playing against him. This guy would find ways to beat you. And he could change the game on a, you know, like a pivot, like 90-degree pivot. So you'd be going along and it'd be slow. He'd start a fight. You know, if the team is 2-0, Vancouver's up, and we're carrying the play, and he'd start a fight, and next thing you know, it's 2-2. Or he'd score a big goal. And I don't remember him ever scoring when it was 4-1 or 5-2. I remember Jerome scoring when it was 3-2. And just a marvelous competitor, a marvelous individual, and a deserving inductee for the Hockey Hall of Fame.
A classic example of a really nice guy who was not nice on the ice. And I mean, like, and I mean that in the best way. Like, he was a mean, hard player a lot of the time. Berkey, I want to ask you about Pittsburgh, you know, because I think, you know, the Stanley Cup generation is still there. I mean, Malkin's not back yet, but presumably he will come back at some point. You've got Sidney Crosby. You've got Letang. How much do you owe it to those guys to keep trying to win now?
Well, it's a case of, it's not so much what we owe to those players, although I agree with that assessment or characterization. It's as much as how realistic is that hope and that wish. And we think it's very realistic. These are three elite players, two of whom are in the last year of their contracts. And right now, one is injured. Letang's playing some great hockey for us. So we'll wait and see. There's a function here of what's fair, what we can afford, and where we go going forward. But that's a different discussion for a different day. But certainly our intent, and we went through this in the interview process last fall, was that was the plan. See what we could get done with this group.
So in that case, Brian, would you be, you know, inclined, would the Penguins be inclined to add to this team and to maybe sacrifice some picks or some prospects to add to this lineup now?
How can we add to this lineup now, Gordon? I'm not being a smartass. We are capped out.
Well,
we moved heaven and earth to get under the cap for this year.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess if you included a player with a contract and a pick for something, I mean, I'm just curious if that's something that would be on your menu, if you could do it.
Well, I can't. Right now, there's not much we can do. And if you're talking about, okay, moving a player and freeing up money and spending that money on a player back, I'm not sure you've netted out much. But it's not an unfair question. I'm like many teams, there's not a lot we can do right now. It's that simple.
Berkey, Gord's kind of new to radio. He's a TV guy. Sorry about that question. But I want to talk about Christopher Letang. Can you touch on Letang a little bit? I love the player. And playing on a team for so many years with Crosby and Malkin, there's probably not enough attention on him. He's one of those guys that never looks like he ages the way he moves the puck. He's a fantastic player, isn't he?
Yes, and he's having a fantastic start to the season. The issue has been, obviously, durability has been really good for most of his career, but the last couple of years before Chris got here, the team would say, and I think he would concede, that we had a couple of years that weren't really up to par. So the question is, what are you buying if you extend him? What are you getting? He's 35, I believe, he turns this summer. But he's turned back the clock this year so far. He's been good. He's playing big minutes. He's physical. He's making good plays. And he's a great guy. He's a great human being. It's nice to have him here.
How much are you enjoying being back in the saddle, Brian?
Well, I liked what I was doing. I was happy. Like when I settled into my routine with Sportsnet and with Hockey Night, I enjoyed that. I worked very hard at it. I don't know how good I was at it, but I think I was getting better, and I worked at it. And I thought, okay, this is my career. This is the rest of my career. So to get this opportunity, it's like I was never contemplating getting back in. So when I got this opportunity, and it's with Pittsburgh, for God's sake, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Not like you're going to work for any other team, some bland team that's never won anything, that has no history or tradition. It's the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I leaped at the chance, leapt at the chance, pardon my grammar, and it's been fantastic.
I do want to ask you about Vancouver. You mentioned it a moment ago when you talk about Canadian markets. And look, it's every market is unique in its own way, but for Jim Benning, the just torrent of abuse that he's received, fans chanting fire Benning at games, the media on him, social media tough. How much sympathy do you have for him?
A ton. Well, first off, he's a great guy. He played for me. I had him in the Vancouver Canucks organization when I was an assistant GM. He played for me. We sent him to Milwaukee. And he finished his career in Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken. But he played for us. He was a captain or an assistant captain on our first year team in Vancouver in 87-88. He was a terrific player. He'd been a longtime NHL player and a great guy. So this is a guy we had as a character guy or an organization that we really believed in. He's had a good career in management. He's a great guy. So how do I feel for him? I sympathize for him. I've been there when they're chanting and booing. I've been part of that. It's no fun. And it's been intensified. Like you said, Gord, the whole industry is intensified on the hate side, but Vancouver's a schizo market. It's like they hate everything there.
And so when it happens, how hard is it personally?
Oh, I'd say there's two answers. I think it's tough for everybody because the losing alone is enough. When your team is losing, that's enough to crush you as a person, like as a hockey guy. That's hard enough. Just walking that mile with the players, losing game after game, that's enough. That's enough cruel and unusual punishment for anyone. When you heap the abuse on that comes particularly with social media, there's only one thing you can do. And I truly managed to do this, but I think very few people do, which is tune it out. Like, it's just white noise. It's not going to affect your ability to win. It's not going to get you fired. You're going to get fired because you don't win enough games, not because people are screaming and yelling. Tune it out. Focus on the team. But again, I think there are steps you take. You talk to the players, tune it out, and then dumb it down. Whatever you're doing is not working. Make it simpler. It might not be the most scintillating hockey, but make it simpler. Focus on fundamentals. Cut your goals against down. Get your special teams a little better, but dumb it down and get your work ethic back where it has to be. There's really no other way to come out of a slump that I know of.
Berkey, you've been around the game a long time, and I keep watching night in and night out, and I see this McDavid. It's highlight reel after highlight reel. I mean, You know, have you seen a player, and I mean, you've been around for generations, have you seen a player this electric, this dominant? You know, I guess Bobby Orr and you know, other players come to mind, but, you know, is McDavid in that ilk?
Well, he's in that category. When you're talking about this, Jamie, when you're talking about elite players and superstars,
right,
you're talking about royalty. And I don't like where people say, oh, this guy's the best player, that guy's the best player. We're so fortunate that we've got a generation of players like that. But this guy's on the short list of any list you do where you talk about the most dynamic or exciting players. When you use those adjectives, you're talking about special players, and he is special. I said this when I was in Calgary. I used to hold my breath when he got the puck. Like, our guys would get the puck, and I would hold my breath. That's with Connor McDavid. I remember one night, one of the first times we played against him, we got the puck, or Connor got the puck, the Oilers got the puck, and Connor hadn't touched it yet. But Mark Giordano and TJ Brody, two pretty good players, two pretty good skaters, see that McDavid's going to get the puck. They both turn and sprint in the opposite direction. They're sprinting toward our goaltender. All you can see was the backs of their sweaters and read their numbers. And they're sprinting because they know they've got to generate enough foot speed by the time they get to the second blue line to have any chance against the line rush. So he's a dynamic player. He's exciting. The only player I've ever had that I think was as fast as Pavel Bure, and he was the fastest player I ever had till I saw Connor. But I've seen the debate, who's best, who's this, who's that. I hate watching Connor McDavid play when my team is playing. I'm terrified.
You forgot to mention me, Berkey, when you're talking about speed like
Very
that.
Good point. This, yeah. this is a good
well, that,
point.
That was an equipment malfunction. Oh, I talked about you about 20 seconds before, and they bleeped it.
All right, bud. Thanks.
Brian, thanks for talking to us. Enjoy being back in Toronto.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That was Brian Burke earlier. Never dull talking to him. By the way, what do Jacob Trouba, Patrick Nemeth, Logan Stanley, and Neil Pionk have in common?
They've all been burned by Connor McDavid.
Oh, yeah. They're going to live on top 10 lists forever.
That's true.
Forever.
Yeah, that's not a good scene.
Was it Sean Chambers? Who did Mario undress?
Yeah, Mario Chambers. Chambers, yeah.
Like, this will be on their resume tape forever. Those two goals. I mean, last night, I thought the one against the Rangers was better.
Yeah, it was.
But, I, you know, like, you guys played against him. I broadcast 1,000 of his games. Pavel Bure was the best player I've ever seen at high speed. Like, he could make his move at high speed and not slow down until I saw this guy. Like,
he scored on me one night in Vancouver. He took a slap shot on a breakaway. I just remember looking up, and the puck bounced into the neutral zone, and he was clearly gone. And I came out to kind of cast my angle, and by the time I got to the top of my crease, outside my crease, he was already on top of me. I was like, oh my God, this guy's moving a million miles an hour. And he took a slap shot and went post and in. It was a ridiculous play. You know, I think we lost 5-2 that night, but he was so scary.
It used to drive me nuts, Noodles, where you would have video. And you would watch Pavel Bure, especially in his Florida days, where I think he only had one thing in mind, and that was scoring goals.
Yeah.
He literally would not come past the red line.
No, they would call it feeding the cat. He would stand on the Panther logo at center ice. His stick was in the cat's mouth. He was standing right there waiting for a pass.
And Kovalchuk was very similar. Playing Atlanta, it's like, guys, just be aware when that guy's on the ice. Don't turn the puck over. And these guys would still get two or three breakaways a game. I couldn't understand it. And McDavid's the same way. You just and that's adds to the greatness, where it's like, you know it's coming, and you still can't stop it. They're going to do it.
Gary Roberts has that summer camp that he does, the summer training he does. They got a rink up in Aurora, I think it is.
Yeah.
And you do two laps of the rink. And if you do it in 40 seconds or less, that's considered elite. So, Stamkos is 39 seconds, some of those guys. McDavid was 34 seconds.
Wow.
It's hard to believe how, in this day and age, isn't it all that you can be that much faster than other people?
Yeah, that is true.
Everyone trains. Everyone's got great equipment. Everyone's got,
Everybody says the game now is so much faster, which it is. Everyone's better conditioned athletes, whatever. And then he's on top of that much faster than everyone else.
All right, so this show has had some debacle-ish elements to it so far, and I think we're heading towards another one. At the top of the hour, Pierre LeBrun's joining us. Then we got Leo Rutten to talk about the Raptors, who are kind of in the ditch a little bit. But when we come back, it's the NFL picks. And somehow I have been dragged into this season-long drama with O, Al's brother, and Hayes. So I was this morning at 10:30 a.m., I was literally minding my own business. And I got the call from Steph, who runs us all. And so now our NFL picks are next, and I've apparently been dragged into this. So we're going to sort that out when we come back on Overdrive on TSN 4, TSN 1050, on the app, and on your home speakers.
La troisième étoile du match ce soir, the third star, le Vandal!
I know you don't know what to think of that, Gord.
It's Overdrive. We've gone from a three box to a four box. Al's brother has joined us. Oh, where's your team hat?
Yeah,
I left it at home.
I'm
in Collingwood. My hat's in Toronto. Right.
So,
I'm truly
really
sorry.
Hope that doesn't ruin the mojo of our picks. We've been on a real hot streak. We had a couple in a row here. Last night came in hot with the Patriots. We're on a good run here.
All right, so this is this week's NFL Picks are brought to you by BookSeats.com, custom flight, hotel, and ticket packages to events around the world. BookSeats.com, simplifying the way fans travel. So here it is, the NFL Picks. What's the record, 23 and 30 you guys are, you and Al's brother?
Something like 22 and 30, yeah. I think I saw.
No, what is the number?
23, Hayes is leading 30 to 23.
30 to 23, Hayes is ahead. Okay, so normally... Jamie somehow sits this whole thing out. I don't know how you managed to get.
You're
Switzerland in this whole thing, so
yeah.
I don't get that. But so it's Al Dog. They make the picks, and then against Hayes.
That's it. That's
okay.
So now, I don't know how this started. What the hell happened?
So Hayes is sick.
Stupid banter.
So now he didn't text me the picks. He texted them to you. Did he? Oh.
Yep. Which I gave to the grappler behind the glass.
Okay.
Who in turn should have given them to you.
Okay, so who had the pick last night? That was...
We had the pick.
And you...
Yeah.
So you have the Indy Buffalo pick,
Indy
and then
Buffalo.
You have the Sunday Nighter as well.
Okay, so I'm going to make my pick, and then if Hayes agrees with it, that's the pick. If not, we'll have to sort it out. Okay, so it's the Colts at Buffalo. The Colts are favored by 7.
Bills favored by 7.
So Bills are favored by 7. The Colts are getting 7 points. I'm taking the Colts.
And the points. You are right with Brian Hayes.
Okay, so we got the Colts. We're taking the 7 point. Okay, so now the next one is the...
Well, let's just hang on a sec. Let's rewind here.
Why do you like the Colts? You can't just take the Colts and not explain why you're taking them. Why do you like the Colts?
Well, seven's a big number. The Bills aren't, you know, a touchdown's a lot for me. For a team like Buffalo, that has not blown people's doors off yet. And Indy's been better of late, so I'm hesitant to give more than 7 points a lot.
And that's fair. It's a tough number to beat. It's a big spread, and obviously everyone knows I'm a Colts fan, so I'm hoping that the Colts cover this one and hopefully they win it outright. But I don't know. They barely beat the Jaguars last week. They took them right down to the wire, realistically. And if you take a look at the spread and kind of what Buffalo has been able to do in their last five games against the Colts, they're 3-1-1 against the Colts. So Colts not really been able to play with the Bills right now. And the Bills, 7-2-1 against the spread in their last 10 home games. And the Bills got a top-five defense, top-five offense, number one defense. And
but
Carson Indy's, Wentz.
But Indy's been better, and Indy also had the terrible start. Indy was 0-3.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been. I just. A team trending like that, I don't like giving more than a touchdown.
I simplify this, and I think Buffalo is going to blow the doors off of Indy. And
okay.
I love Hayes' selection.
And mine.
Josh Allen, unfortunately, Carson Wentz.
Yes.
Am I right, O? Am I right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So you guys now have the pick for the 4 o'clock game, which is
Dallas and Kansas City. The Chiefs favored by 2 points at home. So that's the game that we got going on here. This is a bit of a toughie. I'm not gonna lie, just because the Chiefs were just god awful for a while there. They were so putrid, and then they came out and they just laid a beating on the Raiders last week. But I'm not sure if I'm so sold that they're completely back. I don't know if I am. I like the Cowboys here as the road dogs at plus 2.5. The Cowboys are 8-1 against the spread this season. 4-0, perfect 4-0 on the road. The Chiefs have yet to cover at home this season. So I do like the Cowboys to go in. They've got the number 4 passing team, number 1 rushing team, but the top offense overall, and the Chiefs defense has been leaky. I think that they're going to go in there. I think they could get the victory.
That's our pick. I just so
we
don't
have, we have
know
to
accept, if
we have
I
to
love
accept it.
It,
right? We have to accept.
Yeah,
this
oh yeah.
Thing. We don't get like. What if you don't agree?
We rarely
well, in this
disagree.
Particular case, well, we're always on the same page.
No, no. But what I'm saying, what if you guys pick a game and then Hayes doesn't agree? Like Hayes wants to pick the same way.
No.
Just,
it's our selection.
You just
he doesn't have
pick.
A choice.
You have yeah. No okay.
But
so
why,
Dallas
why,
is
what,
our
what are you
pick.
Worried about there, O?
I don't know. Doesn't what Kansas City does like did to Vegas, isn't that kind of something where you're like, doesn't that get your attention where they're kind of back and they're feeling mojo? You saw Kelsey's interview after the game. He's feeling it. Isn't KC back? Isn't that one game enough?
Yeah, but
for
they
you
beat
to say?
They beat the Giants, the Raiders, and Green Bay without Rodgers.
Yeah, like I'm not sold on them yet. You know what I mean? Like they went and they beat them, and they beat them pretty good. But the Raiders, there's just so much going on with them. Like a lot going on with them right now.
This is a statement game for Kansas City. I think they're a good team. I do think they'll cover.
I just don't see it happening. I really don't. I think the Dallas Cowboys are for real. I think the Cowboys are legit this year, and they're coming out. They're playing well. They just blew the doors off of the Falcons. It was, what, 45-3 or something like that? They're clicking, man. This team is so good. And I mean, if Kansas City can't get stops, that defense is not a team that can come back. They only play well with the lead. We saw that. I just don't think that Kansas City's going to be able to get out to a large enough lead where that defense is going to be effective. And I think that this is going to be a high-scoring affair, and I believe that the Cowboys are going to come out in front.
All right. Next up, the Sunday Nighter. This is Pittsburgh at San Diego, and the line is Chargers by 6.
I've been in San Diego for a couple of years now there, Gord.
For me?
The LA Chargers.
Sorry, LA. Sorry. The Chargers. Yeah, I'll say the Brooklyn Dodgers next. You can kick me off the show. The Los Angeles Chargers, home to the Steelers. I'm going to take the Chargers and give the 6. What does Hayes say?
Hayes is saying Chargers.
Oh,
Hayes is
wow.
saying Chargers.
Okay, so,
we're on the
so,
same
we,
page.
So we agree.
So how big of a difference to you is the -6 line and the 7 line? Like, obviously, it's a full point, but that's also a pretty big spread there. You feel comfortable with the Chargers?
I feel more comfortable with that. I think also East Coast going to West Coast.
Mm.
I'm a little more inclined to lean that way. I'm a big fan. I think the Chargers are a good team. And I'm comfortable giving 6. Now, it's funny you'd say that. If the line was 7...
It's funny, isn't it? Just 1 point can make a big difference.
It's a mental barrier that it probably shouldn't matter, but I like the Chargers.
Look, this is going to be a difficult game for Pittsburgh to cover. I'll be honest. I think it's going to be difficult. They're going to be missing T.J. Watt, no Joe Hayden, Minka Fitzpatrick's in COVID protocol, not expected to play. Big Ben might not play either, who missed last week with COVID protocol. He's got to go through the same hoops as Rodgers did to get back into this one. So there's a lot of chips stacked up against the Steelers to win this week. However, a couple of trends, and you talk about some trends that you liked when you were talking about the Colts. Well, how about the underdog being 4-0 in the last 4 meetings between these two? The road team 4-0 against the spread in the last 4 meetings between these two, all of which go towards the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think the Chargers have an off. Well, I don't think. I know. They have the worst rush defense in the league. 32nd, ranked 32nd, giving up 155 yards. This could be a big game for Najee Harris, the rookie running back out of Alabama. He could have a big game here and keep this one close. And I think if he has a big performance, I think the Steelers have a good chance to cover this number.
Oh, were you
and
Al's
brother, wouldn't you agree, Al's brother, that with Mike Tomlin, it seems like the Steelers, they can dig deep and pull out a big victory. I believe the first game of the year, they marched into Buffalo.
Yes.
And took down the Buffalo Bills. So that aspect I like about the Steelers.
Right. So, are you comfortable with your picks? You're happy?
I'm happy. I leave it to my guy there. He's a professional.
Right.
So, we don't have a winning record, but I trust
him. But hang on. 2 months ago, he's on waivers. You were like, You were like,
those were dark times. Those were dark times. Al's brother, you'll even admit that those were dark times.
Those were dark times, but a lot of real good players have been on waivers and come back.
Hang on, weren't you on waivers a couple of days ago?
No, this is a couple of weeks ago, I guess.
Hang on, before the Patriots game, am I not correct? Keith, can you fill me in here?
It's tough to keep track, but I feel like at least once a week you're on waivers.
No.
I'm pretty sure that's been the case since September. Am I wrong? Going back to last year, you were on and off waivers.
I think it's been a couple of weeks, though. Like, we went on a solid run where we were winning four or six games a week.
It was a decent run.
And then last weekend.
You were 0-3 last week.
Last weekend was a little brutal.
Hang on. Hold on. We're on a roll. We're getting better. We're coming on. You were 0-3 last week.
Before that, we were doing well. And
pressure on, having to produce is different than waivers. It's
right. Okay.
We'll be fine. This week's a big transition week for us.
We have hats now. This is the first week since we got the hats, since O-Dog.
You are sweating bullets out of that hat, by
absolutely.
The way.
But ever since O-Dog brought these hats out on Monday, we're undefeated. I would just
like to point that out. Those hats are huge, too.
That's
like if you ask for $1 million salary or that hat full of nickels,
I think I'd take the hat. So to recap, Al Dog won last night with the Patriots.
Big win.
The 1 o'clock game on Sunday, Hayes and I guess by extension, have the Colts +7 at Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
The 4 o'clock game, Al Dog has the Cowboys and 2.5 points at Kansas City, correct? And on the Sunday nighter, Hayes and I are giving the 6 points on the L.A. Chargers.
Yep.
Home to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yes. Those are the picks. They're locked in.
Locked in.
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good about this.
How are you
feeling
going to last week?
Well, it doesn't matter.
You never talk about the bad beats. You never talk about the bad beats.
Just like Jalen Hurts always says. Okay. You flush it, you move on.
Okay. This week's NFL picks were brought to you by BookSeats.com, custom flight, hotel, and ticket packages to events around the world. BookSeats.com, simplifying the way fans travel. 5:42 on a Friday afternoon. I'm Gord Miller sitting in for Brian Hayes on Overdrive on TSN 1050, TSN 4 on the app, and on your home speakers. It's Overdrive on TSN 1050. Gord Miller sitting in for an ill Brian Hayes, back with Jamie McLennan and Jeff O'Neill on this Friday afternoon. Coming up at 6:05, we'll talk to Pierre LeBrun, our TSN insider, about what's going on around the league, including Montreal. He does the Canadiens games, and man, that is a tire fire. That thing has gone south in a hurry in Montreal.
Well, now Bergey's got COVID. Like, it just anything that could have happened to that organization and everyone in it has happened. And we're, what, 15 games in? We're not 70 games in. Yeah. You're 15 games in.
So the Canadians.
What are you going to do with the coach? I mean, the coach just got hired last year, brought the team to the finals, and now it's a complete disaster. I have no idea. Like, what? I wouldn't even know where to start.
Well, I think, to be honest, it starts with the general manager. Like, he's in the last year of his deal. Where is this organization going? Like, what's the direction here? And is he going to be making the decisions that affect them in the future? Like, are you unloading guys at the deadline? Are you offloading guys at the deadline to get picks? Is that what you're doing? There's a lot of uncertainty. They unveiled a mural today in Montreal, and a buddy of mine in Montreal said it should have been that Edward Munch painting, you know, The Scream. You know, the guy.
Yes.
that should have been the mural. It's tough. And we'll talk to Pierre about that. Leo Routens will talk about the Raptors as well. But, like, it's, you know, the thing in Montreal that strikes me is that, look, Carey Price out all year. Shea Weber out all year. Joel Edmondson all year. Philip Deneau goes to L.A., signs as a free agent. So there's four pretty important parts of your team.
Yeah, Hoffman. He signs Hoffman, and the guy misses the first two or three weeks,
and he's been hurt again. And he's hurt again. So they've just got a lot of young guys that are just not up to this yet. It's not their fault, but I mean, you're asking Nick Suzuki to take on the top centers in the NHL every single night.
Yeah,
and it's hard. And
you know the market, Gord. People in Montreal, they can hear and understand what you're saying, but they also are completely pissed, and they want to know what kind of course of action is going to happen. I don't know. That's just the fan base. That's a fan base in any Canadian market.
You're right, though. Like, I mean, at the end of the season, Shea Weber sounds like he was just barely getting out of bed to play hockey. And then, you know, they shut him down, and it was weird. You know, Bergevin has the press conference, and like, yeah, he's not going to play this year or may not at all. You're like, holy smokes. Okay, so you're like, one player you can like, okay, it's a big loss, big leader, big minutes, right, all of that. But you're like, okay, maybe Petrie can step up and Romanoff takes another step. And then it's like, well, Carey Price, like, I don't know if you can see that coming. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have the behind the scenes privy, but like, what is that? The week before, or the day before training camp, or right, yeah, in? Like, it was, this is your golden goose that got you to the finals, not available to you. And, you know, rightfully so, he needs to get himself taken care of and that. But those are two big pieces that are just going to be unavailable to you. So, all right, like, start the rebuild, or start these kids getting experience. Cole Caulfield, I think people just thought he was going to show up. And, oh, you and I are guilty of it. I thought he was going to be a 25-goal scorer this year.
I thought he was hands down. Like, I almost thought Jamie was a slam dunk for the rookie of the year. Like, slam dunk.
Because we saw a kid, yeah, that wins the Hobey Baker, has nothing but success, just shows up and scores everywhere he plays. So you're like, it's the next progression. Just be a star in the NHL. It's actually a good lesson for a lot of people that, you know what, you don't just get to put on gear and be a superstar. You have to go through the process. And, you know, I think Caulfield's going to be a fantastic player, but there is going to be bumps in the road. Romanoff, same thing. I like, yeah, him as a defenseman.
He's a good player. He's a kid. He's still young.
He looks lost, man. Like, there's times, yeah, you know, when your top guys are not playing well, and that's, I mean, Petrie I look at with Montreal. Petrie, I think, is a fantastic player. He's a shell of himself right now. It's almost like, you know, everything that's gone, like I say, everything that's gone wrong, these guys had a short summer. I don't even know how much training they were able to do. And they thought they were going to put their skates on and go, we're the team from the finals. A lot of different pieces, and it's not the case whatsoever.
Well, you know, we talked to Brian Burke earlier about Vancouver. Like, yeah, Elias Pettersson's been terrible at Vancouver this year.
He has
like,
been.
He's not been very good. So how can, you know, you didn't think he was going to be terrible. You thought, well, will Ekman Larson work out? Will this work out? Their best players haven't been very good. And so I don't.
That's a problem.
Like, then what? Like, I guess the manager loses his job for it. But, man, like, it's just so tough. I mean, I just think Montreal's been dealt a bad hand. But my question is, where are they going from here?
You're right. Like, because if sorry to interrupt, Gord, but if Bergevin's a lame duck and you're not going to sign him anyways, have somebody else in there to take the reins and make the decisions moving forward. If you're just going to let his contract expire and not renew it, you got big decisions to make.
Yeah.
And I know Jeff Molson and I think Mark Bergevin have a really strong relationship. And Molson might say, hey, if you're going to make these moves, you got to run them by me because you're probably not going to be here in 6 months. But ultimately, the next question is, who's going to take over? That's a tough market because to take over a job in Montreal, you have to be bilingual.
Yeah,
I mean, probably, for the most part, correct? Like, that's
I guess.
Well, I don't know. You tell me. I'm. That's a. It's. I know it's a real touchy subject, but you have to be able to cater to both languages there. That's a. You know, I think a prerequisite for a lot of things that go on with that organization, like it or not. It.
Sam Pollock spoke French. Sam Pollock could speak French, but never did.
Well, I mean, Al McNeil had the fight with, I think it was the Rocket Richard. Like, they won the Stanley Cup, they fired him.
Scotty Bowman is bilingual, but never spoke French. Spoke French.
You know, I would actually, and because Pierre Lebrun could probably speak to a lot more. Yeah. You know,
we'll do that.
We'll have to ask him.
Yeah, I think, you know, the other thing is people think, well, you know, if you're in Montreal, well, we'll just tank for Shane Wright. Well, first of all, Arizona's in that mix, but even finishing last, the odds now of getting the first pick if you finish last are about 1 in 7. It's about 16%.
Right.
Like, I mean, there's no. In fact, it's more likely than not that you won't pick in the top three if
exactly.
you finish last. It's about 60% you don't pick in the top three. Ask the Detroit Red Wings. They keep getting bumped out of the top three in the draft lottery. So, you know, this idea that you're just going to throw the cards into your season and get the first pick, it's far from guaranteed. In fact, it's more likely you won't. That's right. That's the real grim part of the equation. Coming up, we're going to be on TSN2 here for the next final hour of the show. We're going to talk to Pierre Lebrun. We'll talk about Montreal, what's going on there, and do you have to be bilingual to be the GM of the Montreal Canadiens? We'll also talk to Leo Routens. The Raptors were off to a great start this year, but they have lost 3 in a row and 6 of their last 7. We'll talk about the situation with the Raptors. And there is some bright stuff there that the rookies are playing great for them. So we'll talk about that and how good are the Golden State Warriors. That's all coming up on Overdrive on TSN 4, soon to be on TSN 2, on TSN 1050, on the app, and on your home speakers on this Friday afternoon.